Hello, my name is Grant Berger, and I will be your handler. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 5 of Get in the Truck, also known as Operation Aquarius. Allow me to begin with an additional reminder. This audio series you're about to listen to contains disturbing content, extreme violence, and confronts mental health issues. So you've already heard from earlier in the series, children may be the victims of violence. Listener discretion is advised. I reached out to Agent Lance Tripper, public alias Ari Rubin, to exchange mission-critical intel between recording sessions. He stressed the importance of four possible areas of concern that keep him up at night. I will now share that list with you. Wording is my own interpretation.
That extremely private list, that conversation we had that was not to be shared.
Seriously.
It's a HIPAA violation.
I confided in you, sir.
You confided with a public broadcaster, sir. This is your own mistake.
I think if he rewords it so as to be misleading, it's fine.
I've just made it more flowery, so it's like a more detailed version. And Ari can let us know more, and we can delve into these things. But this is tonight's conspiracy theory corner.
Oh.
Ooh.
Number one, there is a U.S. government super soldier consciousness assassination program. Number two, a reptilian ruling class oversees global affairs from the shadows. Number three.
Ari's look was obviously.
Yeah. Is that a conspiracy or just like a fact?
Well, that's a please hold your conversation until you know all four of the things that keep Ari up at night. Number three, secret organizations add toxic chemicals to the atmosphere to control the weather and our minds, also known as chemtrails.
Chemtrails.
Number four, and finally, this was an addendum that was sent in a separate, very important, urgently marked email with a big red flag on it that needed my attention immediately. The continent Australia does not exist.
That is my favorite one.
I've heard that one, God. Too. That's a good one.
That's really good.
I mean, you think about it. Have you ever met anyone from Australia?
Yes.
No.
They're no actors. One has. They're actors.
The accent is exactly the same as the English accent. So it's everyone's just posing as someone from England.
I will say this. I have met people that claim to be from Australia, but every time I've met them, it's been in some other country. It hasn't been in Australia. So,
is it because you've never been to Australia?
100% of the time.
How can you go to Australia when it doesn't exist?
I mean, my brother's been there.
Walkabout is really just, the mission that they're on to go convince us all that it does exist.
Right.
For what?
Exactly.
For money. It's money. Yeah, I follow the money. That's where your answer.
You look at who will benefit. And,
so let me understand. The plan is convince the world Australia exists. Something, 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 profit.
Exactly.
I just love the mix of healthy skepticism and conspiracy theories going on here and where they hit each other at the head. Like, it's amazing. What were you going to say, Ari?
I was just going to say, going back to number one, that is some really, really out there. It links up to our first one where you were talking about gang stalking.
Well,
like,
please.
These people, they believe, yes, they're out of shape. Yes, they're maybe like 65 years old. And yes, they don't know how to fight. But the government made it that way because their consciousness is uploaded to a super soldier's body.
Oh.
To assassinate people only for that time. And then they're like, and then they upload me back to this body. Obviously, the perfect cover.
They'll never suspect.
But they get together. They all get together. Thank you, Internet and Reddit threads. They just get together. And then they're like, this is you. You're experiencing this, too. Well, it must be true.
Wow.
So
they're having flashes of what they think are repressed memories or suppressed memories.
Yeah.
And they get to, and this is like, oh, this is clearly what this is.
Yeah. And then also at the end, they're always like, also, Australia obviously doesn't exist.
Right. I mean, that's in their signature in their email. So just people never forget when they talk right. to them.
Exactly.
Are they assassinating important individuals around the world or just random targets of interest that are at odds with the U.S. government?
I've seen a few different videos of people kind of just confessionals of them, like they woke up and they remember things. And it's for shadow governments. It's for the U.S. government. Big jobs, small jobs. I mean, I don't think anybody's being uploaded to some sort of janitorial services in the CIA position. Right.
There aren't too many small assassination jobs. those tend to be pretty important.
Just a minor assassination gig.
Small assassination job is not a big deal.
Before lunch.
But there's a difference between the leader of a terrorist cell in a corner of the world and JFK. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the thing that interests me is the lizard people thing. That's always like, I wonder where that comes from. As a huge fan of the miniseries V, which I've reiterated time and time again to blank stares on any number of shows that we've done, I was looking one time at, because I can't remember where I read it, but like the different countries have different ideas of what aliens are. Like all countries like around the world have stories of people being visited or abducted by aliens, but in different countries, the alien's physical form depends on what country you're being abducted from. Where the two I remember, one is like in Sweden, aliens are supposed to be like really tall blonde people, which is just like, that just sounds like you're being abducted in Sweden. Mm-hmm. And by Swedish people. And then the other one is Italy. The aliens are lizard people. Like here, they're grays. They're like the big heads and the big eyes and everything. That's an American alien. Whereas in Italy, it's lizard people.
I had no idea about that. There are Swedish aliens. There are Italian aliens. So the lizard people are Italian aliens.
Right. Right.
Okay. Got it.
Mm-hmm. But there's also elf.
Right.
So just remember that.
There is also elf.
Hey, Louie!
I prefer Gordon Shumway as the preferred nomenclature. I do love... That show was a funny show, but I just always love that his actual name was Gordon Shumway.
Well, Gordon Shumway, among a series of other conspiracy theories, are what keeps Ari up late at night.
It was Willie.
Hey, Willie!
Not Louie.
Hey, Willie!
Sorry to interrupt. No, it's good every time.
Let me provide you with a gift for your critical thinking, Ari. I received a tweet from James, which reads as follows. Let the St. Elias Ranger carry the standard sidearm for protection from coastal brown bears, biggest goddamn bears in the world, in his carry-on. The S&W Amex 50 caliber revolver. So I'm going to make sure that you have a 50 cal revolver. You will have access to the largest possible handgun. That is my reward to you.
I don't know, though.
Thank you.
I don't know. A lot of places don't take Amex.
Boom.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Boom. Yep.
Does Amex even exist?
Have you ever met anyone from Amex? No.
That's why a lot of those places don't accept the car, because they're like, I'm not interested in your phantom made up credit. It's not a real card. I'll take Visa, please.
Discovery only.
It's said to exist somewhere in the middle of the Pacific Ocean in the Southern Hemisphere, and we just can't find it no matter how hard we look. You're right.
Discover, not Willie, not Louie. Damn it.
Willie.
All over the place.
I will accept Diners Club as well. Well, we ended last episode with agents Grady Harrison and Annabelle Morgan confronting the absolute horror of the master bedroom. Do you guys remember what you saw in there?
from last week? Yeah.
What did you see, Kate?
Lots of blood. Mostly blood.
Yeah. Let me take you to the map now so you can get a visual reinforcement of that.
No need. I don't really need to see that again.
Even just like this representation of it that's sort of abstract is so horrifying.
Yeah, there's a certain detail of the graphics. It's the darkening of the blood all through the middle, which just goes to show you it's like layer upon layer of blood. Like, it isn't just like, oh yeah, there's blood everywhere. It's like, yeah, there's blood everywhere, but in the middle there's so much blood that it almost has like that dark, almost brown color. It's
like
so
someone was gutted in this room.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, it's so terrible.
It's really disturbing. And the fact that you probably had to give notes on this, be like, I need more blood. Let's make it pooly here. Make it darker. It's really intense.
Yeah, I'm just imagining Grant directing this. Like, yeah, more on the bed.
Bloodier.
Need more blood on the bed. So disturbing.
Well, as you step in and take this in as your characters, what we're laughing at currently begins to overwhelm you. But before we check in with your characters and see exactly how the fear that exists in their very bones affects them, we're going to check in at the same time with Lance Tripper and Dr. Morton, agents towards the front of the house. They've just left the bathroom full of a teenager's cosmetics. They see in front of them something that I have yet to reveal, which is a game room with a pool table.
Oh my god.
Oh.
The game room is large enough to hold a pool table with 6 feet of clearance on all sides. There are pool cues scattered across the floor. One of them has been snapped in half and is covered in blood. There's something written on the pool table. Skid, what is written on the pool table?
Dagon.
Dagon.
Is it scratched into the felt?
Yeah,
or is it like cut with a knife top with
or
like
written
chalk?
With like a, yeah, with a Q chalk.
It looks like it was carved in, much like the message you found in the drywall earlier.
So messed up.
Lance's forensics are high enough to understand that it was probably done with a kitchen knife. You see, towards the rear of the house, another doorway opening. And ahead, you see a passageway leading into what appears to be an office with an overturned chair. What do you do?
Oh, man. Yeah, there's another, like, kind of spatter of blood leading into the office. Yeah, Dad is, like, not enjoying this very much. He's just, like, got his... I think he wears, like, a neckerchief, and he's, like, pulled it up over his mouth. And it's kind of... He edges, skirts around the police barrier, and the bloody animal, looks like animal footprints on the ground, and he just slowly kind of steps over the other barrier to get doesn't even want to, but he's like drawn to like look into the office door, the open door.
Okay. As he gets closer, he sees that it is not an office, but a spare bedroom. This bedroom has what appears to be an infant's blanket curled up by a window, a bed for a couple to sleep in, with overturned television, lamp, and again, more blood. There is a dresser with unfolded clothes on top of it. And as you continue to enter the room, there's also a closet filled with clothing and some baby toys next to what appears to be a crib and a changing station.
Oh my God.
The perpetrators of this crime seem to be truly evil, that something like this
could be visited, not just upon the adults in this room, but to an infant. This is truly bone-shattering to your sanity.
Yeah.
At the moment you see this, I'd like you to roll a sanity roll.
Yeah.
Ooh, I bet. I bet you would, Burger.
Yeah.
And I will have Grady and Annabelle before you all roll. Before you roll, if I heard any rolls happen, those are now forfeit. I'm going to give you an option. You've also seen terrible photos of this crime scene when you dealt with Detective Julia Reardon. You've been looking into autopsies and speaking to people about the very gruesome details of this case, and this has been building up into you for some time now. I'm going to give you the choice between rolling two sanity checks or one sanity check. If you roll two sanity checks, they will be against 0/1d4 sanity points loss each. If you roll one sanity check, it will be against a potential loss of 0/1d8. If you fail both of the dual sanity checks, you will lose a minimum of 2 points, maximum 8. If you pass the single sanity check and try to muster your confidence around getting past this mental break, you could lose nothing or as little as 1 point, but that could be as high as 8. I think you should do this less as a metagaming opportunity and more of how you think your character would handle these moments. Lance, if you're peeking around the corner, you will have to make the same check. If you have not entered the room, you will be free from having to do it at this point.
Yeah, I hear old dad kind of like gasping, and I rush over to him. And then,
dear God.
And then I see the horrors.
There's nothing good about this, and nothing good will come from it, except for the potential of you identifying the threat, finding the threat, and eliminating the threat. Let's do this in an orderly fashion. Joe first, followed by Ari, followed by Skid, followed by Kate. Joe, what is your choice upon seeing what you see in the master bedroom, allowing the pressure of the entirety of the experience of Yuma wash over you? What does Grady do?
Well, I think it's been building for him, so I'm going to roll 2. I think that that's worse. So that's what I'm going to do. I just think that it's been building in him ever since he got on to this site. I mean, even looking at the pictures, like you said, could have influenced it. Okay. So, all right, here's one. I'll be fine. I am fine. 47 under 68.
Nice.
So holds it together for one. Roll the second one right now. You good?
Yep.
Second one. 77 over 68.
Oh, no.
Critical failure.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my God, Joe.
Oh, I forgot the double numbers were critical.
Oh, my God.
I mean, there aren't even many. There's, what, 3 possible?
For you?
Whatever. Crit fumbles over my sanity. And I was like, just don't fumble. Ah, that's not going to happen. 77.
Wow.
I believe if you fumble, I think you just take max. I think you would take 4, I think.
4 points of damage.
Oof. Oh, man.
Yeah, so he comes in here and sees this with Annabelle. Annabelle, he's right next to you, and he takes it in for a second, and then you hear this strange sort of like gasp come from his mouth, and he just
throws his hand over his mouth and he runs out of the room. And he might even just like harm like evidence. I guess he just like he runs out of the house and bursts out onto the deck,
like ripping tape as he goes. With
yeah,
his feet.
Exactly. And he comes outside in front of Ortiz, and he just sort of like puts his hand on one of these wicker chairs, and it's just like.
Ortiz walks over to you and places his hand on your back and wordlessly, "It's all right, agent. Here, you'll need this." And he hands you a bottled water.
His hand's shaking as he reaches out for it. He grabs it and like he can barely get his hand around like the locked onto the cap to twist it open. He starts to open it, and he doesn't even take a sip because he feels like it's going to come right back up. And so he just holds it open for a second, and he's just staring down and just like breathing, trying to get air into his lungs.
"Take your time. I'm watching the entrance," says Officer Ortiz. We go from that scene where Grady is trying to compose himself, and we see Lance Tripper walking in behind old Dad Morton, taking in the scene. How does Lance take in this scene? What is your decision on how to handle this potential sanity loss?
This is just really awful. This is like the worst thing I've ever heard or seen. So I too am also going to go for the two.
Okay.
28.
Ooh.
Good.
Old Lance Tripp holding it together.
Nice.
That didn't go so well. 65. For 51 that I'm currently at.
Roll a 1d4.
One.
1 point of damage.
Nice.
I accidentally checked on your sheet when we started. A check towards adapted towards violence. You can leave that in there. This will be the attempt. Lance took some unnatural sanity damage from his flashback that was not discussed on the air, but that Ari and I have discussed during character creation. Is there anything else that Lance does before I check in with how Dr. Morton is handling this?
He is frozen. He's just, he can't look away, and it's trying to just make sense of the situation. And he's just kind of standing and shaking his head and just breathing, and this isn't, I didn't know, this isn't supposed to. And he's just kind of mumbling to himself about how fucked up this is.
You now have newfound, maybe respect isn't the right word, but I think you were surprised by how well Detective Reardon was able to keep it together in speaking to you. Towards the end of your conversation with you, she began to show a bit of how she felt. Just a bit. How hardened she must be from years of working on the Force. And speaking of hardened and years of experience, we check in now with Dr. Morton. Skid, how does old Dad approach this sanity loss? How do you think it manifests in his character?
It's interesting because I think old Dad, I mean, he served in Vietnam. He was there towards the tail end of it, so he saw some pretty horrific things over there. He's also an expert in his field on the Sand Creek Massacre, which happened in Colorado in the mid 19th century, in which a lot of this like happened. So he's sort of been immersed in this imagery for years of his life. He's never actually seen anything like this, but to a certain degree, he is sort of inured to it just because of his experiences professionally and in the military. So I'm gonna roll once. We'll see what happens. That is a 70 over
Oh no. Oh,
70 over 60.
Oof.
Okay.
2 points.
Okay.
It's not too bad.
Not too bad. Could be worse.
Not awful, but losing sanity at any point and getting closer towards perhaps a permanent disorder.
So yeah, he's experienced this. Like, he's been to the sites. He's lectured on this, like the stories of U.S. soldiers butchering women and children. And I think, but actually, like, seeing the blood, like being there in the moment rather than 100 years removed, it shakes him.
Well, that leaves us one last character to check in with. But before we check in with Kate, we fade to black. The scene opens in near pitch black darkness. It's nighttime over a large body of water with no land in sight. You can just make out the stars above and only blackness below. As your eyes acclimate to this darkness, you see a C-130 Hercules cargo plane going by.
Awesome.
As Joe and I have both illustrated, you hear the droning hum of 4 turboprop engines along enormous wings of the military transport as it glides over the ocean. Inside the plane is a SEAL team of 8 making their final checks with their buddies before jumping.
Did you pack this mess? You're slipping! I wouldn't jump if I were you!
Cut the shit, Quinn. Turn around.
Quinn gives off a barely audible laugh over the sound of the plane while Morgan takes a deep breath and checks his gear. She meticulously but quickly makes her checks, the repetitive preparation putting her mind at ease for the jump. Towards the aft of the plane, the rear paratrooper door glides open with pneumatic pistons. The ocean is an inky blur under the plane. The jumpmaster gets everyone's attention to line up, and the red light in front of them turns green. The combat rubber raiding craft, aka the Zodiac, goes out plummeting first, followed by all 8 SEALs in quick succession, jumping into the pitch black void below. All 8 SEALs free fall together, precisely separating mere feet apart when they are ready to deploy their chutes. Once they splash down, they regather the Zodiac and ready it, gather their parachutes, and quickly head off. They travel by motor for a bit, each SEAL scanning the water and horizon with night vision goggles until eventually they see a ship in the distance. They kill the engine a few hundred yards outside of earshot and paddle the rest of the way until they reach the base of the hull in absolute and deadly silence. One by one, the SEALs board the ship and silently navigate through it until they reach the engine room, quickly and cleanly taking out any enemies along the way. They pause for a moment outside the door, hand signaling the plan for handling the 2 armed guards inside. One man breaches the door, and the 2 others neutralize 1 guard, each with a single round headshot, in unison. Morgan and Quinn follow and size up the room before beginning to search. Morgan comes across a shoebox-sized chest with etched markings on it. It's hard to tell if the markings are a language or a design, but she knows this is likely holding what they were looking for. She opens the box and sees a smooth and perfectly circular pearl the size of a grapefruit inside.
Found it, guys. Let's get out of here.
Morgan shuts the box and secures it with the rest of her gear. She's terrified every time they jump, but she is the best swimmer on the team. Morgan has the full and complete trust of the squad to keep what they came here for safe. As they get ready to disembark, the ship makes a sudden and unexpected jolt.
I hate these fucking pirate ships!
Quinn says. The team maintains their focus on completing their mission and heads back up to the deck and in the direction of where their Zodiac is docked. Before the SEALs can reach the edge of the dock, an enormous humanoid shape emerges from the water in front of them. It's somehow darker than the darkness surrounding it, even with the aid of their night vision goggles. Not just the absence of light, but a subtraction of it. It seems to lean over and look down onto the boat with glittering pools where perhaps eyes should be. The whole team freezes,
maybe unsure of what to do, maybe lost, gazing into the void in front of them. Morgan stares and thinks that she might see a vague undulation within the shadows of the figure's body. Before she is able to take another breath, the large figure becomes a wall of water that crashes over the ship, snapping it in two, pushing the remains of the boat along with her SEAL team deep below the inky surface. Fade to black.
Oh, man.
Whoa. Wow.
Jesus. So you killed your whole SEAL team so no one could say anything about it?
I was the big thing.
Yeah.
And you blamed a monster.
That's the twist.
You were the monster.
It's a very elaborate cover story that we're now debunking right here live. Kate, did you end up taking any sanity damage yet prior to the role I'm about to have you take in this room?
No.
Why don't you give me a sanity check after witnessing a violent supernatural effect, because you have not accounted for it in your past yet.
Okay. 48.
And that is under your current sanity?
Under?
Under 90.
Under 90?
Oh, 90. Wow. Oh, my God.
I'm a Navy SEAL. I'm so ready sane. To see this stuff.
I don't think that that's possible.
Super possible?
That's not possible.
Yes, it is.
Oh. That's possible?
Mm-hmm. My power is 16.
Your agent can gain more sand from overcoming a threat than he or she actually lost from facing it, but it can never bring sand higher than its maximum possible score, 99 minus your agent's rating in the unnatural skill. You have nothing in unnatural, right?
Nope.
Wow. A 90.
So you're never gonna break, ever.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I do roll pretty poorly sometimes.
So. You have to roll extraordinarily poorly in order to fail a check. Wow.
I think it's 80. I think it's 80, not 90.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That is in skills, not in 80 is like the typical maximum for skills, but even there, yeah. 99 is the top.
But I'm saying to calculate your sanity points, isn't it your power times 5? If so, then that's 80, not 90.
Oh, maybe.
No, it's not. 50 times 10 is 5 times 10 is 50. 6 times 5 is 30. So add those together. Oh, it is 80.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did you get 90?
I think
because she's fucking cheating. That's how.
Cheating. That's how. Guys caught me.
She rolled a 3 in math.
Oh no.
She's going to kill us like she did her team.
But what's your intelligence score?
0. I sent you like a first version of this sheet and then I updated it cuz I wanted to put some more points in something else and I forgot to alter my sanity points which relied on that score.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm still really good.
When you print it out with a laser jet, it's just got to be right.
It's a
question.
Yeah.
All right, so you still pass with an 80 there in your past. You're still a hard ass as of this moment. Are you going to take two checks or a single 1d8 check at this point?
I think she's going to do the 1d8 check again. Same deal with old dad, not that she's expecting to ever see something like this, but perhaps her training comes into play at this point to help keep her sanity in check just a little bit more than other people.
Yeah. She's in her career, I'm sure she's killed like tons of kids.
Yeah.
Or she's people, seen, at least people.
I mean, she's by her own hand seen so many dead infants. Yeah. This isn't even moving the needle.
All right, Kate, go ahead and roll that sanity check.
19.
Wow.
Wow.
Unfazed.
Unfazed. I wouldn't expect it, and it seems so strange to me that someone could pass a sanity check for both of these things, but I love that as a character, that this badass hardcore Navy SEAL is a member of the team.
That makes sense. If nothing else, she's seen a lot of blood.
That's the one thing I have going for me. I have no forensics or searching skills. I can shoot a gun, and I probably won't ever break.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a fucking rock.
Grady just bolts out of the room, and I just imagine her just slowly turning and being like,
well, what's wrong with you, Grady?
What's going on here? Yeah, maybe she's like, you know, when she's on a team, she's used to a team with the same skill set or expectations that she has. So maybe she's a little surprised that people might be falling apart a little bit by now, but then remembering, oh, wait, this is not a SEAL team. We're from all over the place, all different ages and backgrounds. So maybe she comes out, sees that you're out on the deck here and kind of stands near you. Like, she's not going to pat your back or ask if you're okay. She's going to, like, stand near you and wait for you to be done.
All right, I'm sorry. I think I'm okay. I just needed some fresh air is all. It's the smell in there.
Yeah, it smells really bad.
Does that bother you at all?
I mean, yeah, it smells really bad. But I don't let it all the way in. Does that make sense?
Don't let it all the way in.
Yeah. I keep it outside.
All right. All right.
Everything in there has nothing to do with you. We're here to make sure this doesn't happen again. So we have to go in there and, unfortunately, look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay. He just sort of wipes the corners of his mouth and never actually vomited, but might have retched a little. Takes a sip of the water and goes with the water bottle walking back into the house with Annabelle.
Yeah. And maybe regroup with Lance and Aldette. I'm sure. I don't know. I don't want to speak for their characters, but I imagine unless they want to do investigation in that room and figure out what's going on there after having seen what they saw.
Well, I think Grady would go back to the bedroom with Annabelle and just try to do one check there to see if there's anything, you know, he didn't really look at the room. So he'll try to skirt around the blood as much as possible, even though it's very difficult. Try to skirt around the evidence markers and see if there's anything anyone missed. Could I roll a search, maybe?
Go for it.
That is a 22 under 60. That is a critical success.
Nice.
As Annabelle gets his head back in the game.
Nice. Refocused.
Refocused.
You search through the master bedroom, and without causing any further deterioration to the quality of the crime scene after you ran out of it, you get a sense that multiple people were probably in here. It's more of a forensics role, but as you continue your search, you see a very, very, very tiny bit of blood right here in the bedroom. And that leads you... I'm sorry, into the bathroom.
In the bath, the master bath.
Yeah. And that leads you around the corner.
Oh, shit.
Oh, it's a big bathroom.
And into the final room in this wing of the house.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
I didn't even realize.
Wow. A massive closet.
Massive walk-in closet.
Yeah, so the master bath then opens into a massive walk-in closet, and there's blood in the closet, too. Not a ton, but there's drops of blood around a broken and crashed-down vanity. Yeah. And then dribbling over onto a love seat. That's how big this walk-in closet is.
Yeah.
And it looks like there's some sort of weapon in the bathroom on the ground.
Is there? I think that's just the door. That's the door.
Okay, because it's also... Oh, it's the door open. It looks like it's something on the ground.
Oh, yeah, that... I
seeing
see
things,
it.
Annabelle. Why don't you calm down?
You could use a door to kill someone.
Yeah.
She's not wrong.
The Navy SEAL sees weapons everywhere.
I've used a door to kill someone before.
That coat hanger is just marked with death.
You're now getting a sense that no matter what corner of this home you walk into, with very few exceptions, every bit of it was saturated not only with blood, but with violence. There was not a peaceful corner. There was no way to hide.
He'll look through the clothes. There doesn't seem to be any blood on any of the clothes, so he's just kind of like kind of run his hands through and check and see, is there really no evidence of any violence that ever touched these clothes? No blood spatters or anything like that?
And then... okay. You have a 60 search, which is very good. And you look through all these clothes, and you just notice designer brands appropriate for folks with expensive tastes in their middle age. Nothing unusual. You see there's a lot of newer clothing that looks like larger sizes than the previous clothing. So it looks like Daniel, the father figure of the family, was probably gaining some weight and enjoying life in Shangri-La and needing to buy newer clothes that could fit him. But nothing unusual there. The search, I'm going to just let you with a 60 also know that none of the vanity is missing. It's just broken. You see broken legs nearby and whatnot. They seem like they just kind of broke as a struggle happened here and it fell over.
Okay. Okay.
So you've almost explored all of Shangri-La now. There are a few rooms towards the front of the house in a westerly direction that have not been searched. And right now, as Annabelle and Grady are in the master bedroom closet, Lance and Oldette have to decide what to do in the guest bedroom where they found the horror.
I think Dad is kind of almost mesmerized, like goes over towards the changing station in the crib and starts like sort of picking through the toy chest, which is also looks like spattered in blood, and turns around, takes a look in the closet. I just wanted to do a general search though.
Sure, go ahead.
69.
Is that under or
that's above? over 50?
Over 50, okay. You're unable to find anything unusual outside of what is immediately apparent.
We're violating one of the core concepts of our show.
Yeah, there's no 69 rule in Delta Green?
Oh, you know what? There should be a 69 rule. Let's change that. Let's take that back. Let's flip it and reverse it a la Missy Elliott. Is it worth it? I think it's worth it indeed. All right, Skid, with a 69, you get the best possible result.
That's why he didn't say over. He was just like, oh, I just rolled the best possible result.
Right.
It's true. I forget how the best possible result can technically be a failure. In our system. Let me pull this up for you then.
Oh,
can
shit.
Can you see that?
Yep. Okay. Oh. So it's like a blood spatter pattern on the door. And this is the closet door?
This is the closet door inside of this room.
Oh, my God. And it looks like, again, like maybe a stick figure painted in it. But for certain, in the lower right-hand corner of the frame, someone has carefully written in blood the number 197.
Yes, indeed. And I would not have revealed that portion of the picture so that your discerning eyes wouldn't have been able to find it. Robert, old dad, you guys wouldn't have seen that number at all without that reveal.
Wow.
So that's what the 69 got you. The 69 is also going to give you some more knowledge.
It's funny. I thought the same thing about because there's a similar figure on the bed. There's like a sort of a bloody figure. If you look, it's almost like a constellation.
In the main bedroom?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I saw that initially. It was like, I'm just seeing things now. But yeah. now that I see this closet door, there's almost a very similar, like, humanoid almost form, a stick figure of blood.
Creepy. Yeah. Is that just our natural inclination to seek patterns where there are none, or is it actually a thing?
Right.
I can't tell you that.
I think that's a question for Grant. Grant?
Yeah.
I've already said too much, but I'm going to say even more as you take in the closet door, the blood spatter, finding the 197 in the middle of everything. You're also drawn to a pile of toys in the corner nearby the changing station. Mm-hmm. And you see a glint come out of it, and that glint just catches your eye. But when you turn your head towards the glint and then away from it and the glint's gone, mm-hmm. you have to go back and investigate what that is now. And what you find is a teddy bear. And as you pick it up and look at it and you try to recreate the glint,
oh no,
you stare into the teddy bear's face for long enough and you see one of the eyes looks different than the other. And what? One of the eyes, if you look long enough, looks like it's an aperture for a camera lens.
Oh, nanny cam.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, whoa.
You huge. Also would not have found this without a 69 on the roll.
Wow.
Whoa. Wow.
Would never have shown up, or you would have had a very, very, very hard check.
Wow. Oh my God. Yeah, his heart skips a beat. He's got, I think he like pulls on latex gloves as he's doing this, and he's holding up the bear, like turning around, and he knows that his heart skips a beat when he realizes what he's holding.
So there you are, standing with a nanny cam, perhaps proof positive visual evidence of what happened in this home. You'll have to take it to a computer at the very least to be able to see what's on it. So right now you have comfort, I suppose, and maybe being closer to solving what happened here.
I think it's more horror having to actually witness whatever happened here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh man. Or Grady will come down and connect with them at this point.
Annabelle's right behind you.
Well, there's one more room, right? There's one more place we have.
Yeah, there's the back room.
But also the other side of the house where the kitchen is, there's a whole other wing there, too.
Oh, God.
Oh, geez, right.
I almost don't want to go.
I know. I don't want to uncover any more fog of war. This is horrible.
All right, let's see this last room toward the front of the house. Or the... Oh, my God, there's multiple rooms down here. For God's sakes. Grady will ask about the bear.
Lance is going to join you.
What's that? What's that you found there, old dad?
There, young man, if you'll see. I believe this is one of them newfangled animals that doubles as a camcorder. You see there in the eye?
Oh. Yeah, nanny cam.
Nanny cam, exactly. I think you may have to witness a nightmare or two.
Yeah, and he just kind of tucks it under his arm.
Yeah, we'll have to take a look at that. That might be the most valuable piece of evidence we find in this place. In fact, that might be all we need. We'll just get out of here. Everyone just go. No? All right.
If you want, I'll be the first to enter the rest of the rooms in case there's more like this, just to warn you.
Oh, that's interesting metagaming, almost, putting the person who has hard sanity loss like in there first.
Well, I mean, I say that as Annabelle. She's seen each and every one of you maybe like falter a bit.
It's both sides. It's also a lovely character development thing. It can be two things at once, but that's great. I love that idea. So why don't you go ahead and do that, Annabelle?
So she goes into the hallway here. Is that door closed?
No, it's open. Would you like to look in there before you look into the room towards the front of the house?
Like a quick peek in here.
Stop.
opening new rooms in this place.
These are way less bloody than the other ones.
Yeah, the so blood scary. Trails is kind of... Yeah, all so right. I guess maybe from here, it's like from here in the front of the house, there's another bedroom. Not as much blood, but the trail's going out. So maybe somebody is grabbed here, attacked, and then drug into the middle of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then there's like a break.
There's a break in the game room right next to the pool table, which is like what they drug him for a second, then lifted them up.
Lifted them up.
Then put him back down and drug him. It looks like everything leads to that master bedroom where Annabelle and Grady where Grady lost his lunch a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think they jumped people in the living room, dragged them into the master bedroom. They jumped people in that bedroom, maybe. And then there was a whole separate massacre, maybe in the kids' bedroom, or maybe...
Right, and the kids' bedroom would have been where Private Ryan and... Serena, what's her name?
Sierra.
Where Private Ryan and Sierra probably slept. That's their room.
Oh, right. And then the baby crib is like next to there. Yeah. Okay.
Right. And you think the master bedroom is? Was it Daniel? Is that his name? No, that was another operation. It was...
Daniel's the name of the father. Sandra is the name of the mother.
Oh, it and is then, Daniel.
Yeah, okay, Daniel. Yeah.
And Grace is the mother of Sandra. So the grandma lived there, but on the maternal side. So Grace W. Wright.
Okay.
And Beth was the name of the infant daughter.
And do we know where... I mean, we definitely know. Can you remind me where the bodies were found?
They were largely found in the master bedroom.
In the master bedroom? Okay. Most of them?
Yep.
But not all of them?
Not all of them.
Where were they found?
Some were found in this guest bedroom where you believe Sierra and Private Ryan stayed. But it's
yeah, there's no blood trail coming out of that room.
Right.
Out of the Sierra and Private Ryan bedroom.
You get the sense that... It's difficult to ascertain based on the fact coyotes contaminated this crime scene before you even right. got here. And they could right. have moved these bodies around.
Right. But I think if nothing else, it seems like people, whoever it was that did this, were moving stealthily through the house and catching people unawares in different parts of the house. Because like it looks like somebody was jumped and lost blood in the big walk-in closet by the master bedroom, for example.
Yeah, sitting at the vanity, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody's obviously jumped, like, watching TV in the living room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody else has jumped in the bedroom with the child and everything. All the bodies, though, despite being maybe gnawed on, all the bodies are recovered, right? There's no missing body.
There's no missing bodies, but they've already been... cremated, as you learned earlier.
Right, but they were all at the crime scene mutilated, but all there and accounted for. And all the bodies mutilated in the same way, right? The same horrible things. Every body.
Yes.
Is there any kind of a check that I could do against that number, the 197? Or is it too early for that?
Right now, I don't think you have enough context to be able to try to make a check. If you do it based off of what I've already told you in the future, you know, from like your anthropology role, which is the only role I've really allowed to resolve yet, nothing comes to mind. And you spent a long time looking through that information and speaking with your Harvard colleague. You know, I'm going to tell you that some of the roles that you're going to want to make are going to resolve themselves over the course of probably what's going to be a week worth of you returning here, working on case theories, conferring with Yuma PD, all the while keeping a cover story of this being a drug cartel related thing. So it's going to be dicey for you to do this. And I will resolve those roles kind of as you decide you're finished here. So let's see how much more y'all can take today. If you can kind of clear out the rest of this fog of war and head home, you want to head home now, you tell me what you'd like to do.
I'd like to go check out this office?
The office is in the southwest corner of the home at the very front. There's an overturned filing cabinet and an office chair that flank a small black desk by the window. A new iMac sits atop the desk along with other office supplies and an untouched espresso.
I'm going to use search.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not good. It's not a good roll.
Shit.
It's not a good roll. It's a 73. I'm a 60 in search, so I don't see anything. However, I okay, yeah. Great.
You look around, you're able to find kind of, they have games in the closet here. This looks like kind of a place they might play board games on a fun night. And yeah, you don't see anything other than what's readily apparent with that roll. But you do have a score of 60 already. And that will net you, out of the corner of your eye, you see a post-it note underneath the keyboard.
Oh, shit.
That post-it note has the password for the computer on it.
Oh. I alert Grady. Hey, Grady. You should take a look at this.
You see Grady is just standing at the pool table, staring down at the Dagon scratched into it. Just sort of reaches his hand slowly out to touch the lower part of the G as it's been scraped into the felt. Almost lost for a second. Just before his finger touches the cut, Grady! He calls out, he snaps his hand back and turns around. Yeah, yeah. And turns to walk down. What do you need?
I found this. I hand him the, I show him the post-it note. I'm guessing this means something. Looks like a password, something like that.
Got a computer here? He looks in and he sees the laptop.
Is the computer there or was it taken as evidence?
It's there.
Okay. It's there, huh? All right, he's got plastic gloves on, right?
Yep.
All right, so using his plastic gloves, he'll try the power button on the laptop.
Hums.
Okay, and it's a Mac, you said?
Mm-hmm. And the user is already selected with a little circular icon of a seashell, and it just says Daniel underneath it.
He looks around and hits enter or return, and then goes to put in the password from the post-it note.
It doesn't work under Daniel, but you quickly kind of figure this out. And
multiple users.
Yeah. You get over to Sierra's profile. Her password is Shangri-La 771. The S is a dollar sign. The A in law is an at symbol. And then 771 is the address of this location. It opens up, and with your human int, you're able to read through browser history, go through emails. Again, this is something that I said earlier. This is taking several days, but I'm going to give you the information now. You're able to put together patterns. You see that Sierra gave birth to Beth Ryan on January 2nd this year. And you get the sense that her husband-to-be, Private Homer L. Ryan, although he's a new member of the family, was quickly accepted. You see records of him moving in right after the baby was born. Pictures on the hard drive of them posing in front of Shangri-La as he opens up the baby in hand, a pink ribbon on her head and across the door.
Jesus.
You see that he'd quickly proven himself a faithful and honest addition to the household. He did a lot around the house, and he insisted. You see emails back and forth between Sierra and her father saying, "Why are you making him pay for rent?" But Daniel insisted to pay behind his wife's back. She caught him one day after she told her dad not to accept the money.
Wait, Ryan insisted on paying?
Mm-hmm. Ryan wanted to pay Sierra's father rent for staying here. Seems like it meant a lot to him to be able to provide for his new family. And it was eating at him a little bit that he had to stay at his parents', his in-laws' home. Soon to be in-laws. Not even in-laws yet.
Is that it? Is that really the bulk of it? Okay.
I'm kind of curious as to what Private Ryan's posting history is, like where he's been, if he's been, what different parts of the world where he's been stationed. Kind of curious about that.
He's mostly been stationed nearby in Yuma. He has not been abroad yet. He's just kind of, it was the best job that appeared open to him after school, you get the sense of, after high school. And he's been dutifully doing his job ever since, but not making a ton of money doing it. And you can probably research more of him after you get out of the house a little bit.
Old dad leans over, claps on Grady's shoulders as he's sitting at the computer. And he says, "Well, a computer taint nothing but a gas-powered abacus." Just kind of turns around and walks out of the room.
Huh? Gas-powered?
Gas-powered?
Oh, God.
Just for shits and gigs, Grady's gonna... I feel so weird about it, but he's gonna... He goes into her email and just searches, keyword searches, Dagon to start.
Hmm.
And hits enter.
Searching. Mac hasn't been turned on for a while, so it needs to index the context of the drive.
Oh, no.
Come on.
Nothing. Okay. If you type it into Google search, it says, "Do you mean dragon?"
Did you mean dragon? Returning results for dragon.
Game of Thrones.
He'll go back in and he'll, again, and he searches C to C in her email just to see if there's any. Anything like that. SEA to SEA.
You find receipts for digital admission to what is now Six Flags Hurricane Harbor, but what was at the time Wet and Wild. The picture you saw in the foyer of the two of them together. Two adults. If you look through the rest of that day, you see that Daniel was set to stay at home and take care of the baby when they went to the water park for like a little fun day trip out.
Get away. Okay.
Hey, Grady, is there anything about that nanny cam we could plug in? Is this where that footage is stored?
Oh, it's a good question, Lance. Let's see here. And he'll go, can I grab, oh, dad, can I see that bear? Can I take a look at that bear?
Yeah.
And he's going to look for like a label, like anywhere, like a manufacturer or a brand.
Well, it might be stored on the bear if there's like a USB port or something in it.
Give me a search roll.
Give you a search roll. Such roll I had never seen. 52 under 60.
Nice.
Grady, you find a zipper underneath the base, and in fact, if you hold the bear in your hand, it feels like flat and not plush like a normal teddy bear would. It feels like a flat piece of plastic
designed to sit on a shelf. Yeah.
And that zipper goes straight across it, and you find a slot for an SD card.
And is there an SD card in it?
There is.
Oh, God. No. So he pushes in and pops out the SD card.
Oh, my God. You plug the SD card into the rear of the iMac, which still has an SD card slot. And you brace yourself. And the Mac can't read it because it's NTFS formatted.
God damn it. Fuck. And he turns, he's like, fucking Max. Fucking
I told you, Max. Gas-powered abacus.
Normally, this is kind of weird, too. You would know with your computer science. Normally, FAT32 is used on these, which is used between both operating systems. Maybe, like you said, you're looking up the type of this. It's a weird, seems kind of Southeast Asian, the manufacturer. You've never heard of it before. It's called Daosun.
And if I type that name into her email, is there a receipt in there or anything there like that?
It was recently purchased.
Okay.
But you get a sense, based off of your time in the CIA, that if you got this back to a forensics lab or a cybercrime department, that you'd be able to do something with it. And you have a sense that Yuma is large enough to have something like that at the PD station. And right now you have full access to it. So that's probably the best place to start for you.
Okay. Yeah, it's not going to work on this computer here, Lance, but good idea. Good thinking. They probably got something at the police department, though, that could decode this thing. And he'll pop it back out. And he's just going to put it in his wallet for the time being. He's going to slip it into his wallet rather than putting it back in the bear. That's all he's going to do there. And nothing else of interest on the computer, right? No strange profiles, no private, no Homer Ryan profile.
No. All
what,
the social.
What about her search history? What about her, like, Safari search history or anything like that? Anything unusual?
Visiting sites like David's Bridal, looking at best cake tasting. It looks like the cake available in Yuma weren't of satisfaction to her, so she was looking out towards Phoenix, other towns. It's all about getting married soon.
Yeah, it's a goddamn shame. All right, Annabelle, you want to check out the rest of this place? Let's just get the hell out of here. And
yeah, let's make it quick.
Yeah.
So she goes out and around. Unless someone wants to go into that bedroom.
Yeah, I'd like to go.
Okay.
You walk into this bedroom. This bedroom is a kind of modern-looking bedroom compared to the rest. It has hardwood floors, a carpet in the middle, a bed laying perpendicular to that carpet. There's a food tray at the front. And another walk-in closet. You see the blood trail leading from the base of the bed out into the game room. What do you want to do in here?
I'll just give it a search. I'm going to walk by the bed and give a search.
Mm. 8.
Nice.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah.
That is excellent. This is, again, you're assembling a picture of this house in your head that is better than what we're looking at on Roll 20 right now, and you're seeing patterns begin to search. And I will tell you, eventually, throughout the course of this story, that Lance is going to have an excellent revelation about this house, but now is not that time. You're just getting the seed of that information in your head right now, and you're seeing this room better than anyone else has, if that makes sense.
Grady rushes in to see if he sees it better. He rushes in and just like looks in and like looks around like, hold on, yeah. Fuck this.
He doesn't see a rake that's in the corner of the room and it hits him right in the balls.
The old rake in the bedroom trick. Oh.
So man. As Grady tends to his privates, Annabelle is on the other part of the house. I always get this. Yep. I wish alone. This was northern part of the house. The left side of the house as you're looking towards it from the front. The laundry room lies west of the kitchen towards the front of the house and is appointed with top of the line Samsung washers and dryers. There's an unfolded pile of baby sheets and washable diapers on the folding table. There's a hamper waiting to go into the wash filled with clothes that will never be worn again.
Yeesh.
And why'd you have to make it dark, Grant? This was just a nice,
was just
nice
be a
family
room.
Story.
Yeah, I know. To go. Having a relaxing jaunt through a murder house.
And you notice no obvious signs of struggle or blood. You have noticed so far that the killer or killers had no real compunction around hiding what they did. So, in here, it just seems like maybe no one was in this part of the house is your first deduction.
So she calls out because she knows Grady's right out in the hallway. Just looks like a laundry room out here. No blood yet. And then I feel like she might think that this door leads to the garage.
She is an architectural genius.
Oh, yeah.
She swings the door open, and it leads into a clean and undisturbed, beautiful state-of-the-art garage. Outside of cleaning supplies and other items that are typically stored in a garage, there's a work table and a full-size GLS Mercedes SUV.
Yeah. Yeah, Dan, get it.
There's like a work table with like tools and stuff that's like not really touched or...
Yeah, do you want to examine them more closely?
Grady's going to kind of eagerly come along once Annabelle says there's no blood.
Yeah.
I feel it smells like this great might... in here, too. It smells like cleaning supplies, so Grady can probably like get his crap together in here.
Hmm. I feel like Annabelle has like a mechanics, a little bit of a background in that, and like mechanical engineering, so she's like, I don't know, the garage seems like the place she can look in.
Oh, great. So what do you have a score in that?
Mechanics is 20, and then mechanical engineering is 20. Majored it in college.
With those two things together, you look over all the tools here, and you see a layer of dust over them. You get the sense, you've seen stuff like this before with people who you meet at barbecues and stuff, and they're like, check out my tools! And they're a guy that bought like the whole tool set from Home Depot, but has never used them for anything. So you notice a layer of dust on it as you pick up stuff, and just undisturbed.
What a shame. All right. Looks like there's one more fog where there might be a little bit of blood. We didn't go behind the TV to what looks like the dining room, like a formal dining room.
The dining room table's position seems undisturbed through half of its surface, though half of its surface is covered in blood. The seven chairs lay strewn about chaotically. There's a strange pattern of blood between the two chairs.
Another search roll. Searching on this strange pattern of blood and around the room in general. Ooh, 93.
Oh, 60. No.
Damn.
I'm wondering, that's not since it. She's good at combat and fighting, if she can see something about the weird, quote-unquote, pattern of blood.
Sure. You have seen blood spatter like this before, even though you're not a forensics expert. You've seen it. Did you ever train in boxing?
Jiu-jitsu.
Okay, jiu-jitsu. You've trained in a hand-to-hand combat where safeties were off, for lack of a better term. You've stepped into fighting rings like an octagon, and you have seen this type of pitter-patter of blood happen to someone who has been on the wrong side of a punch or an attack. This kind of corroborates what you heard earlier about defensive wounds, about fighting back, that this wasn't the immediate kind of what you must imagine to have had that much blood be released at other parts in the house. Gutting?
Yeah.
Gashing that happened? This is kind of the first couple attacks worth of blood.
So there's a door leading to the outside off of this room, so do we think they came in through that door? Were there any signs of breaking and entering? I can't remember.
There were not that you've been able to see. You're building up a case, and some of that will become apparent as you continue working this case file as you leave this place, and I promise to let you know, but that's an excellent question. You see now that they put the police, is what I mean by they. They've blocked off all the windows into this part of the home at the front of the house. And the reason why you couldn't get in, I was not doing a good job of explaining that to you, is because they don't want anyone from the street to be able to see in.
Oh, right.
Okay. And if you were opening and in and out of this area all the time that way, people would be gawking and kind of looking through. So that's why you couldn't get in here. I'm sorry I didn't explain that well when it first came up. But yes, that is the entirety of 771 Palma Avenue.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
What do you do now?
Did we ever actually search the game room?
No, we didn't.
I'm going to do... Dad is still in there. I think he's going to do a search. O2.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yes.
Come on, old dad.
You see in the... right corner pocket. I'm going to pin it right now.
Oh, my God.
You're on a roll, old
man. That's a terrible start to a sentence. That is terrible.
Never want to hear that.
You never want to hear that.
A bracelet from what you think, as you look at it, to be like a cheap jewelry store. And it just says Sierra on it.
Oh,
it's pink
God.
Glitter into cheap silver. So maybe she was wearing it. Maybe she was playing pool here at a certain point as this happened. And you get the sense that like there's a little break in the cuff. Like it, like maybe she was like shooting pool and it like ripped off and like landed in that pocket.
Okay.
Yeah, that's something with a two like that. That's the type of stuff you see that even the police who've been through here and done by your estimation outside of the prints you found in the back corner of the home on the outside, this and a few other items. They've done an excellent job with this scene.
Mm-hmm. They didn't notice the 197.
Yeah.
Or the nanny cam.
Again, you had to get that with a 69 roll.
And they didn't know, and obviously they didn't notice the nanny cam. I'm really just confirming with you, Grant. They didn't know the 197, right? There's no evidence marker on it.
Yeah, we're not besmirching the fine men and women of the Yuma PD. We're just
You're excellent agents.
I mean, they hired a very strange guy to man the crime scene.
That's one place where they
special
might have shown questionable judgment.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Did I miss a joke about them being fans of getting the trunk? Because there's a fucking Easter egg on this map.
What?
You got there it.
Joe, if you haven't seen it.
You get a bottle cap.
Yeah!
Whoa.
Where?
Oh, in the
horrific
kid's bedroom.
It's on the TV.
Oh, my God. That's
it's
awesome.
It's in the trunk.
Oh.
That's great.
Wow.
Oh, amazing. Wow. God, great Easter egg, Grant.
Nice. I didn't tell you guys that I signed over the TV rights to get in the trunk as I've been hosting this year without telling any of you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you do that. And a lot of these search roles that you're going to say, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to have this happen over a period of about a week, the rest of the investigation into here. But I think after such a rough day, for me, unless you guys have a compelling reason to do so, it would make sense for y'all to start thinking about heading out.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, if it's too late to go to the PD, we could just go, you know, back to the hotel. Do we have a hotel we're staying in? I can't remember where we're staying.
Do you have no hotel yet? But you can probably pretty easily pick up one. I can do a quick search nearby since you're determining.
I'm just throwing it out there. Perfectly good, empty house that we're in right now.
God.
There are no clean sheets in here.
We need to have
our own plenty
bedroom.
Of laundry. There's a laundry room.
Grady's like, I'll sleep in the garage. The only place without blood all over it.
We'll have you stay at Homewood Suites by Hilton Yuma, which is kind of nearby the airport. It's at 1955 East 16th Street, Yuma, Arizona. One of you books it on, you know, a smartphone as you're walking out through the back door. And as you walk out, Officer Ortiz sees all of you leaving and says,
Hope you found everything you were looking for, agents.
That and more, Ortiz. That didn't bother you in there when you saw all that?
It did. It's important to me that this scene be kept as pristine as possible so that we have the best chance of catching the perpetrators. While you were in there, and you were in there for some time, something came in over the wire. Agent Harrison, was it?
Yeah. What came in over the wire?
The names of the folks we canvassed today. We found some credible witnesses, finally.
What, neighbors?
I'll give you the information if you'd like. First is Sean Rosen. He's a roofer that was working on 773 Palma Avenue.
You look over, you see the roof is completed. Doesn't seem like he'll be back for a while.
The next is Lon Strobel. According to The Wire, he's a construction foreman over at 773 Palma Avenue. Maybe he oversaw Sean's work. There's Gilberto D. Cameron, the mailman, and Julie Maxwell, a local masseuse.
And that's a bunch of people in a bunch of different places. Again, this is kind of leading to why I'm saying some of the results you're going to get are going to come in over a series of days as you figure out when to do what, when.
Yeah. All right.
And how do you even spell masseuse?
Yeah,
I mean, that's
spell
the
that
real
right.
mystery.
Also, the second name I heard was Lawn, like L-A-W-N.
That is a name.
That is? Okay.
Yeah. These like weirdos out in... Oh, my God. I know a guy now. I don't know him personally. He's a friend of a friend. But because of my connection to Oklahoma, I know a guy whose literal legal name is Lon Gardner.
Stop it.
Yes.
Shout out to Lon Gardner.
He's lying to you.
What up, Lon?
Shout out to Superfan, Lon Gardner.
Superfan, get in the truck, Lon Gardner.
Wow. So he writes that down on like a sheet of paper cops keep in their like front pocket, and he hands it to you.
Thank you, Ortiz. I appreciate that. Hey, you've done a great job keeping this scene untouched and uncorrupted. And from what we can tell, there is nothing in here. We've seen that the cops have, or that the officers that have been through here haven't already told us about. So, yeah, great work all around by you guys.
Thank you, Agent Harrison. That means the world to me.
All right, well, we're thinking about booking a room here at these Homewood Suites. Is this a nice place? I know you like things to be just right. Is this a good hotel, or should we look somewhere else before I actually pull the trigger here on booking this place?
I've heard that their cleaning staff is exacting, which is exactly what I like.
Well, that's all I need to know, Ortiz. We'll see you tomorrow, probably. Oh, you like coffee? Do you drink coffee?
I don't like the way it leaves stains behind. I prefer bottled water, like the one I gave you earlier.
All right, well, your water tomorrow is on me. Thank you very much, Ortiz. And we'll head out. And I think I definitely want to just get some rest.
Yeah.
And try to... Yeah, it's a lot for one day.
Yeah, Grady probably just wants to stress eat.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Is there many chilies around here?
Oh, yeah. So I'd like to sit down with a bottle of mezcal and a breakfast burrito, if you get my drift.
Yes. Lance needs to meditate for a while.
As you leave the scene, you get into the SUV, the wonderful police service level Tahoe you've been driving, and I think Annabelle takes the wheel, as she is the most well-trained. You drive onto the highway, onto State Route 195, to get over to the Homewood Suites by Hilton Yuma near the airport.
And as you do, everybody give me an alertness roll.
Ooh.
Alertness.
Alertness, he says.
I have points in that one.
Alert.
Oh, boy. Ugh.
Oh, 88 over 20.
Is a 97 good?
Oh, dear.
81 over 50.
Someone's going to get this. Come on.
Come on, Joe.
Grady's sitting there in this car, and he's just so distracted and so freaked out by what happened. And normally, shit just sneaks up on Grady like it's no problem. He's got a 20 in alertness. Mm. I rolled an 11.
Oh, yes. Oh,
awesome.
Under awesome. 20. So something. Some hair, the hairs on the back of his neck go up. What happens, Grantland?
His Grady sense.
His Grady sense.
No matter when, where, or how quickly your vehicle has taken turns on the way to the Homewood Suites by Hilton Yuma, Grady notices that there are always headlights in the back of the car. He notices the twinkling of a sedan that seems to be tailing you immediately behind.
We're fucking being followed.
And in the driver's seat of the car is someone wearing a black hoodie and a hat and a pair of sunglasses at night.
Oh, shit.
And we'll see you next week when Operation Aquarius continues.
Oh my god. Scary and creepy as shit.
Oh, the Unabomber's gonna catch us.
The Unabomber's following us. Yeah, are they aviators? Son of a bitch.
Wow.
Oh man.
Just a very hip old geriatric lady.
Just someone that went to the optometrist late at night, got dilated.
Yes. That's what it is.
Going to Homewood Suites.
Yeah.
Ha ha ha.